Plot Radio, episode 37. Now with my cable, I'm able to get...
Welcome to another episode of TWAT. I'm your host, Mad Jimmy Simi.
And I'm Froy.
Welcome. Today we're going to talk a little more about home recording and a couple of items on the agenda. First is a little application that we've found very helpful in the past and in the present. It's called Studio Buddy. Studio Buddy is basically a small database of questions and answers pertaining to studio recording and engineering. The user interface is kind of stupid, but it's the content that matters. Unfortunately, it's only available for Windows, and for Macs, only available up to OS 9. Yeah, that's right, no OS 10, and of course, no Linux. So you're going to have to get it on a Windows box, but believe me, it's worth it. The content was developed by two guys, Michael Laskow and Alex Reed, two engineers who have about over 20 years experience in the professional recording and engineering field, and have packed Studio Buddy with some great advice, tips, and tricks that they've learned from their extensive experience. So you want to read some examples from Studio Buddy?
Why not? It's a great little thing to have in hand just in case you run into any problems in the studio. And sometimes when you get a client in the room, you know, you might mess around in your studio a lot and say, hey, you know, I'm ready to go. And then you get some clients in that are paying you for your time and you encounter a problem and you want to get it fixed quick. And maybe it's something you've never seen before. So, I don't know. Fire something up.
Well, as you're looking at the interface, which leaves a lot to be desired, on the left hand you have a list of tons of questions. And on the right-hand side, we'll display their advice. If you click on a question, it displays in the right-hand pane. But also above the left-hand pane, there's a search field where you can type something in, and it'll display everything with a keyword that you typed in.
So let's just say that you're trying to get a good sound out of a snare.
Okay, I'll type in snare. Hit enter. First one that comes up is, how do I record a snare drum?
There you go.
All right.
What's it say?
It starts off with some recommended microphones. Very good. Shure SM57, AKG 414, Sennheiser 421, blah, 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 blah.
And if you don't have those microphones, at least that gives you a reference point. You can go someplace and see maybe if you have something similar.
Yeah, exactly. And then it says, for the snare drum, it's always a safe and highly effective choice to use the venerable Shure SM57. Bring it in from the audience side of the kit and give it a 45 to 60 degree angle with a capsule about an inch or two above the head. The farther away it is from the head, the roomier the sound, but the more potential you have for phase problems. The closer to the head you get, the more bottom end you'll get. It will give you that gushy sound. Technical term there. By the way, it's always a good idea to have the snare mic follow a line to the drummer's crotch. Not that it's a particularly good sounding part of the anatomy, but because it's away from the hi-hat at any potential leakage problems. Leakage sound-wise.
Right.
That's just a brief portion of it. It goes on talking about frequency and things like that.
Yeah, but that gives you an idea of the language. It's pretty easy to understand. They don't use a lot of big words or try to impress you with their vocabulary. It's just a very easy to understand bit of advice for basically most of the fundamental things that you'll want to do in your studio. It's really neat. Actually, if you're opening your own studio, it's kind of fun just to sit down and read it. And it, I recommend going through it before you even have a client or before you even start a project, because it'll give you a lot of good ideas and maybe some things that you never even thought about.
Or even if you know you're bringing in your buddies, if you're just a hobbyist and they plan on giving you a pizza for recording, then you want them to get their pizza's worth.
Right.
just by typing in snare drum, here's a sample of some other questions that popped up. How do I record jazz drums? What is a noise gate? Why do my drums sound thin and boxy? What's this? Got some weird characters in it. Anyway. And really, it's a great tool, like Froy said. You'll find yourself just reading through it. And I did that when I first downloaded Studio Buddy. Just read through the entire thing. And it's amazing, some of the advice that they give.
Yeah, so just out of curiosity, where can they get this?
You can go to StudioBuddy.com. And there's going to be a link that says Download Studio Buddy, and it takes you to a a registration page where you have to type in your name and email address and stuff like that. But for those of you that like your privacy, you can actually just bypass that and go to StudioBuddy.com/thankyouindex.html. And like I said, you can select from all different flavors of Windows or Macintosh OS 9 or earlier. That's about it for Studio Buddy.
Yeah, fantastic little thing to have, and it's free.
It is free. Yep.
And moving on, we couldn't find a good segue. but the next thing we would like to talk about quickly are monitors. There are two basic types of speakers.
Yes, and let me mention that when we're talking about near field, we are talking about speakers that are tailored for studio monitoring, not computer speakers.
Right, yeah, we don't recommend that you go with computer speakers because computer speakers are basically
consumer level.
Yeah, and you don't really, I mean, it's okay, and you might have a set of computer speakers to reference mixes and things like that, because really the more audio sources you have to listen to your mix through, the better. But you want one main system that you and perhaps your clients or whoever can all sit and listen to that are going to be accurate and sound good.
Yeah, the key thing is you want them to sound accurate, not good.
Right. Well, if your mix doesn't sound good, you don't want your monitors to make it sound good. You want it to make it sound how it sounds.
Exactly.
So accuracy is crucial. So as I said before, there are two types that we're going to talk about.
Yep, passive and active. Tell us, what are active monitors?
Active monitors are monitors where the amplifier is built into the speaker. So if you pick up the speaker, you're picking up the speaker itself and the amplifier that powers it and everything. And you'll need to plug it into the wall, you know, just like your stereo or whatever. It should have a power cable, and that would be an active speaker. A passive speaker is like your home stereo. It's just the speaker, and it has one wire coming out of it, and that goes to the amplifier that powers it.
Okay, so as far as active monitors are concerned, what are the pros for active monitors? Well, first, they're going to take up less space because you're not going to be purchasing an external amp that you have to mount somewhere. Also, the amp contained in the active monitor is selected by the manufacturer and obviously is matched to the speaker, power-wise and anything else.
Yeah.
There's no guessing game involved.
Right.
There are some cons, though, and one is they're going to be more expensive because they come with amps built in. But that depends on the quality of the monitor and the amps that come with it. Whatever. So the pros for passive monitors that do not include a built-in amp, of course, they're less expensive. You've also got more options for amps, something that you don't have with active monitors. The flexibility is a lot greater with passive.
Right.
There are some reasonably priced, very good studio amps.
Right. Well, we use an Alesis. It certainly wasn't terribly expensive. Went about $150.
Yeah, and it's
it's really clean, and we like it a lot. And I think we could really upgrade our monitors and use this same amp and have very good results. So amplifiers by themselves can be fairly inexpensive. We should note, though, that there are amplifiers specifically tailored for powering monitors. And they're not necessarily, you got to be careful when you're looking for monitors, because there's a difference between studio monitors and stage monitors. If you're looking through, say, a Musician's Friend catalog and you see like a bunch of wedge-shaped speakers that sit on the floor, those are stage monitors, and it's easy to get them mixed up if you're not used to purchasing or looking at this kind of equipment.
Same with amps, though. You don't want to confuse amps that are tailored for stage.
Right, because they tend to be noisier. Studio amps will be very quiet. Instead of having a fan, they'll have like a massive heat sink on the back, because some amps are really noisy. They've got a big fan in them, and you fire that up, and then you hear it in your recordings and stuff, and you don't want to be switching your amp on and off all the time just to record or whatever. If you have the benefit of a sound booth or a sound room, that's great, but if you're listening to your amp as you're listening to your mix, that can be distracting.
So. Yeah, and I think they are designed to really put out a much cleaner and more accurate signal rather than designed to just pump out shitloads of volume.
Right. So there is a difference. So
look for reference amps. Usually that's
reference. That's what they're called. So case in point, look for equipment that's designed to do this purpose.
Some cons for active monitors that I forgot to mention is if your amp craps out, that's built into the monitor.
Right.
It's going to be a little more tough to get your system back up and running.
Right.
Cons for the passive, though, you can easily mismatch the amp to your speakers and really fuck it up. Say you've got an amp that's much too large for your little near-field monitors, and you know, you don't want speaker cones flying into your face.
Right, and one thing that a lot of people do, and I've seen this before, they'll have a big, huge amp, and like maybe speakers that aren't anywhere close to being able to handle the amp, but they keep the amp turned down, and then they make sure that the signal that they run to the amp, you know, is really low, and then it sounds really good because you've got this big, powerful amp that's nowhere even close to its maximum limit, you know, just sounding really clean through these little speakers. But the problem is, all you have to do is have everything hooked up and unplug something that wasn't supposed to get unplugged, and then you get this big, huge, like, signal going to that amp. No speakers, just go... So it's very important to make sure that you have a lot of fail-safes in your studio to protect your equipment, because this stuff is expensive.
Yeah.
You don't want to have to purchase it more than once.
Another con for passive monitors is that, of course, they're going to require more space. You're going to have an external amplifier. You're going to need a rack to mount it in. And,
yep. And you're going to need the cables to go from the amplifier to the speakers, which in active monitors are built in. And one thing to note, too, if you make a really long run with speaker cables, there is... I forget where, but if you do a Google search or something on speaker cables and power amp connections, because there's a ratio for what gauge of speaker wire you run and how long you run it as for your power loss. And with active monitors, you don't worry about that because you run a signal cable to them. So active monitors are a little more efficient than passive monitors. But
that's true.
If you do it right, you know, and you use good high-quality speaker cables and... good amps and good speakers. Really, there are some people who swear by active and there are some people who swear by passive. So neither system in and of itself, I would think, is necessarily better than the other, even though...
Some people will swear to one or the other.
Right.
So now you may be wondering, what kind of price range are you looking at? Well, like Freud said, you can spend as little or as much as you want, but you do get what you pay for. For us, we're a moderate home studio. It's not your little bedroom setup, but you know, we're not too hardcore.
Well, we have day jobs, so it's very expensive to try to put all this stuff together. So
yeah, well, my best advice is research user reviews and look for something that can really give you an accurate mix and still fit in your budget. With about $500, that got us two really nice near-field monitors that were about $300 for the pair. They were passive, and the amp was about $150, and we got some decent cabling, which cost about another $50. So there's $500 right there. It may seem like a lot, but, well, you know.
Right, I mean...
You get what you pay for.
Yeah, I mean, if you want something that's going to sound decent, you're not going to pick it up for $100 unless you know somebody who's getting rid of equipment, and lucky you. But...
get something off eBay, you know.
Yeah, you can get stuff off of eBay, but eBay's kind of precarious in that you really don't know what you have until you got it.
That's true.
What you're really looking for is one set of monitors that you're going to use most of the time when, say, you're plugging things in and you want to make sure that it sounds good before you record it. This is really important because maybe you need, you know, you can't just plug something in and say, okay, everything's hooked up, my DAW is getting a signal, let's go. You should really listen to everything. And you don't have to listen to it before you record it. You can do just a quick scratch recording. But you need to play it back and hear what your computer's getting. To make sure that, you know, when you start recording, maybe this take is going to be that take that you're going to desperately want to keep. And if you've got something stupid going on in the signal, it's going to be awfully depressing when you're trying to fix it and you have to compromise your sound later. So it's really important for your monitors to be able to tell you what the signal's doing. And there are a couple of things to keep in mind. Small monitors are not going to give you an accurate picture of low-end frequency. This can be fixed a couple of ways. Obviously, you could get bigger monitors, but small monitors will do the job. You can accompany them with a subwoofer, but that gets complicated because you have crossover points and you have to pay attention to where, you know, the small monitors end and the subwoofer begins and vice versa.
So now that you're afraid to go out and buy anything, there is one saving grace, and that's you have a lot of things at your disposal already in your house or in your car or at your friend's house that can help to give you an accurate account of what your mix is doing. And these are just normal consumer level products that you can play your mix through, that not to get an accurate mix like your monitors do, but just to see how it performs in the real world. And this is very important because, well, obviously you're going to be putting your stuff out into the real world.
Right, and this is the target audience is going to be using consumer-level electronics. So this is where your mix is ultimately going to end up. It has to sound good here.
Yep, so your car stereo, cheap headphones, clock radio, boombox, home theater, all of these things are good to pump your mix through.
And, you know, like I said before, don't throw away your computer speakers. You know, just don't use them for your main monitors, but sure, have them sitting around, you know, and you get done with a mix, put them through those and see if it sounds good.
And in the days when we had a much less accurate monitoring situation, playing it on consumer-level products gives you a good idea of where your monitors are lacking or giving you too much.
Right, but it's important to note, if you're going to rely on consumer-level electronics, like let's say you have your home stereo that sounds amazing, you know, you got this big stereo system, if you're going to be doing this to really check your mixes, which is definitely recommended, absolutely make sure you have more than one source to do this. Don't rely on one home stereo, because home stereos are designed to try to produce like a lot of bass and a lot of treble, and they try to knock out the mids and stuff like that, you know, to make music sound good to your ear and make it sound like what you're expecting to hear. But sometimes they also miss things that are going on, and one stereo your mix will sound awesome and another stereo it'll sound muddy. So yeah, you need to make sure that you're using more than one.
Yeah, the environment that these speakers are in also makes a big difference.
Yeah,
you
know? The room, definitely.
Yep. Maybe we can do another episode later on about acoustics, which is a cool topic. But for this episode, I think that's about it.
Yeah, I think we covered all the bases we were looking to cover. To recap very briefly, you can spend as much or as little as you want on monitors, but it's very important that you get yourself a setup that you can rely on and that's going to sound good. And hey, there are a lot of manufacturers out there that make good stuff, and there's a lot of places to get it. The Musician's Friend, your local music shop, the Sweetwaters, yep. You know.
I'll give out some URLs that they can go to. Musician'sFriend.com.
Yeah.
Sweetwater.com.
American Music Supply.
Is that AMS.com?
I think so.
These are all places that sell studio level equipment at very, very reasonable prices.
And chances are there's a place like Guitar Center or something like that, you know, a music store around. And a lot of times these places have monitors out where you can just listen to them. And definitely do that if you have the opportunity.
If you live in the Midwest, you can go and visit Sweetwater.
Yeah.
It's in South Bend, I think. We got to do that one day.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. So
that's about it.
Yeah.
If you have any questions, please send me an email. That's madjimmysimi@gmail.com. madjimmysimi@gmail.com. You've been listening to Twat at twattech.org. I'm Mad Jimmy Simi.
I'm Froy.
And we're out of here. See ya.